Hi, welcome to Coming to America, our podcast about immigrants. Today's guest is Eliezer Ruiz, Dominican-born, award-winning brand strategist, creative director, and entrepreneur with over a decade of experience. He is founder of Ad Notion, a studio focused on meaningful, purpose-driven brand development. In addition to leading creative projects, he is also active in promoting community-driven design and championing the role of design equity in brand building. He has earned numerous prestigious accolades, including Webby Awards, Anthem Awards, and recognition from Indie Agency for his outstanding contribution to the design field. Hi.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming. Dominican Republic, welcome.
I'm far away.
You are far away. We are all far away, more far than you are, but we don't have a nice beach like you guys do. Oh, what a beautiful island, huh?
It's gorgeous. Yeah, I try to go at least once a year, for sure. I'm not going to make it this year, but trying to make it next year.
I used to go multiple times a year. There was a gap, right, when you're waiting for your papers. 5 years I wasn't home, and then I had a business and I went like 5-6 times, and now it's once a year too, or there's years I cannot make it. So tell me about Dominican Republic. How was it growing up there?
Man, you know.
What city are you from?
Santo Domingo.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the capital, right?
Yes, it is, yeah.
What's the island called again? Sorry for our audience.
Hispaniola.
Hispaniola Island, and yeah. You share it with Haiti.
Yep.
And Dominican Republic, right? So correct. It's like 2/3 maybe Dominican Republic and 1/3 Haiti, something like that.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
You got it right.
Beautiful. Caribbean is my favorite. If I travel around the world, I'm like in Caribbean, I found like my spirit animal.
Yeah. I didn't know anything else growing up. So to me, it's just, normal. And so I think now that I'm in the States, I can see like, oh, okay. My upbringing was very different than what people's upbringing here is here. But yeah, grew up in an apartment my entire life. Yeah. Lived in one place.
Yeah.
Never moved.
No. Nope.
Was born there. Grew up there.
You grew up in Czech Republic?
Never moved. You know, I think one thing that I realized recently when I went back was like, man, we live our lives within a 30-mile radius. That's it.
Dude. We didn't have a car. My father had to wait 12 years. He was on a list, right? It's a central plan economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your car when you apply. And then 12 years later, you can purchase it. You buy for it. You have to save and buy for money. But it takes 12 years to supply chain to get it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a 15 miles radius of bicycle, right?
Yep.
And then maybe public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yep.
And the same way, you cannot actually travel because you have to fly or boat because you are island.
Yep. I never had a car until I was in the States. I never flew until I had to come to the States. So travel is just not a thing, you know. Even within the island, a couple years back, we went back for the first time. And, you know, now that I'm used to driving everywhere for like band or whatever.
Not even band. You're going to down the street to the store.
Yeah.
You drive in America, you drive everywhere.
Yeah.
You drive everywhere.
And like I'm used to driving to Southern California, you know?
Yeah.
So we were kind of going around the island mostly. And every time we pass the, like where you pay to go through the tolls or whatever.
Yeah.
People are like, where are you going? And they're like, oh, like basically the other side of the island. They're like, today? I'm just like, yeah, it's like 3 hours away. What do you mean? You know? But it just tells you that people there are not.
Yeah.
We just live in a very small radius of distance from everything we need.
Yeah, it's I had to check myself when I go to Czech Republic, and I was like, hey, I'm in Prague, why don't you come and see me? And they're like, no, you're 2.5 hours away. That's like it's a vacation. You know, because I grew up in a small town, not in the main city.
Yeah.
So your friends are in small town, and I was like, hey, I'll be in Prague for a week, you want to see? And they're like, no, you are in 2 hours away. That's
right.
That you need to plan it. That needs to be like it's a vacation.
Yeah. So I grew up eating amazing food, still my favorite food.
What is it?
Oh, gosh.
Is it plantains?
It's plantains mainly. Number one, top of the list.
Maduros, right?
Maduros. Oh. Tostones. Tostones is just green and maduros are sweeter.
Maduros is my favorite thing ever. I went to Key West and I went to Cuban restaurant because they have maduros, materva and maduros.
Mm-hmm.
Vaca frita, right? Vaca frita.
Uh-huh.
And
fried cow.
Yes, yeah. wow. Okay. So did you go to high school, school? What was your... All this education is happening in Dominican Republic?
Yeah. I went to a private school back then.
So your parents were middle class?
Man, that's a tough... I think this was another huge realization. One, I'm light skin.
You are.
In DR. I'm like the whitest I can be.
So there's colorism too in Dominican Republic?
Yes, absolutely. So you know, Haiti, you know, yes. Folks are black, you know.
Black.
And so, you know, there is definitely like a... Is this typical kind of... I think you see it in everywhere, but like this idea, like if you work outside, you're darker.
Yes, very Asian too.
Yeah.
You have a redneck, right? So that means, but all your skin... Because in China, I had to explain them that I'm actually wealthy if I'm tan.
Yeah.
Because you can go on vacation in winter.
Yeah.
Here in US, right?
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere else, it's the opposite. If you tan, you work in the fields.
Yeah. So Santo Domingo is probably the lightest skinned, focuses the city. But you go outside of it, everybody's very, very, very dark, you know.
And okay.
So, you know, I grew up, you know, going to school, to a private school, middle, I would say middle class. My dad was sending money away, sending money from the States back home.
I see.
So we could afford some things, but, and we owned our place. So that's another middle class thing, I guess, there. It's just crazy to compare wealth.
$20 from your dad got you real far in Dominican Republic, right?
Yeah.
It's like a couple hundred dollars. He's like,
but even to compare what he was making to what, like where we're at today, it's just like, wow, that's
what
crazy.
What was he doing here?
He started as providing, I mean, he did all the odd jobs that most immigrants do. He ended up doing a special care for kids in schools. And then he also does it privately to this day. He's retired, but he does it for someone he became very close to.
Well, that's more values than money, huh?
So yeah.
He was helping, but not killing it, and you know, as a teacher, you don't make money here.
He never, was always like a special caretaker.
Oh, nice.
Either in schools, making sure that kids are, you know, kids with disabilities are having a good time while they're in school, or he's going to people's houses to put them to bed or wake them up or whatever. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so you grew up in Santo Domingo. I read that Dominican Republic has the oldest settlements, university. It's like the colonial, the settlement, whoever, 1400, mm-hmm. early 1500, right? They first went to Dominican Republic, right?
Yep.
Hispaniola Island, mm-hmm. so maybe Spanish Island, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have the oldest university, you have the oldest, like there's like three, four things that, you know, church or something, cathedral or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
We still have
in
that.
Americas.
My brother went to that university.
What is its name?
We call it WAS, which is
stands
up for University of or something of Santo Domingo. I think it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's called Ivy League.
Yeah,
in your country.
Yeah.
Ivy Leagues are the oldest here, right?
There's
like six, seven. All these universities in US are called Ivy League. So then,
yeah.
You are the Ivy League of Ivy League because you are the first one.
Yeah.
Right? Santo Domingo University. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So did you went to college in Dominican? No?
No. Just I finished high school, and right after that summer after I finished high school, I made my first trip to the States.
Where?
To Tampa, Florida.
Ah. That's a nice soft transition, right?
Yeah.
It's like the climate, right?
Yeah. I went in for 2 weeks just to get my stamp on my passport, so that was part of the becoming a citizen piece, and got the literally all I needed to do was to get a stamp and literally jump on the other plane. But I have my aunt has had family, so we stayed for a week.
So what did you think? 18-year-old.
First time seeing... So this was... I was here during Independence Day.
Ooh, De La Five in Florida. I was there
too. In Florida.
I landed in St. Augustine. I was on the beach and I was like, these people are crazy. They're shooting so much fireworks. And I was like, no wonder they are into military. They just love these explosions.
Yep. And one of the house, I think that the home that we were staying at, the person was in the military. So I had the whole introduction to American celebration of Independence Day. This first time I saw vodka shoved into a watermelon upside down.
I've never seen that. Dude, and we drink lots of vodka.
It's like the watermelon sucking all the alcohol. So once it's done, you are eating watermelon that's full. That is hydrated with alcohol. Dude,
Dominican Republic people in
So people were eating watermelon that day. Yeah, it was.
But the size, the cars, the highways, all that has to be like very shocking for you, no? For me, it was when I saw the dimensions, right?
I think it's
so big.
One of the things that I remember was just driving through some of the beaches, we were driving through like a road. A bridge road that was in the middle of the ocean, and I was like, whoa, you know. I remember just being very beautiful.
And Tampa is like that. There's the little cute town, St. Petersburg or whatever. There's these cute towns, beach towns, and it's all bridges, mm-hmm. then it's peninsula, then another bridge. Tampa is not a pretty town, but the around the bay, the beaches are very beautiful.
I just remember neighborhood I stayed at was just one of, you know, your typical cookie cutter house, neighborhood. And at the time I was like, wow, these lawns are green and, you know, like pet manicured. And I was just like, okay, all these people are rich.
Yeah.
You know,
now you see they were not, right?
No,
it's like cookie cutter suburbs.
Yeah.
But I remember that too. Even the apartments, it's like everything is just tail, and every apartment had a swimming pool. Like luxury.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I was like, all of y'all are rich?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, okay. You know, it's just that image alone was way more than I ever had. You know? It's just different.
It's very different because when you come here and you settle down, you actually see it's not greener. The grass is not greener, right? Even if I go back to my town and people still live in their apartments, I'm like, the potential is not that high. You cannot reach whatever you can reach in US.
Correct. Yeah.
But when I look at them and it's like one thing goes wrong in your life in Tampa, you are on the street, dude. You know, there's no like net safety. There's nothing to fall on in here.
Right.
We all live on a cliff, on the edge.
Yeah.
I tell my kids, I like to live on the edge. That's why I'm here. But then you go to, you know, my country or something, and then you have a family, and you never fell on your face like you fail here. So, you know, it seems that it's rich.
Yeah.
But, man, it's edgy.
You're on your own.
You know, you're on your own. Yeah. And if, you know, you break your leg or something happens to you, not break leg, but some disease or whatever, you lose your job, that's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like, hey, we will help you out to, you know, help yourself, dig out yourself. In Czech Republic, that's different. We have these social net. You never reach that potential, but then you never fell on your face like you do here. So I remember that too. I was like, I look at everybody, was like, you know, everyone has a money. Even the construction worker is rich here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Then
in comparison?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. So did you go to school here? Then when you arrived for 2 weeks, then you went back and then you came back again?
So I went back after that trip to Tampa, and I moved permanently. We moved permanently October 9th of 2008. So that was a couple months later.
That was 5 days before the mortgage crisis hit. October 8th.
Oh, gosh.
2008. It hit October 13 or something, and it was over. So you arrive at the peak of the crisis, or the beginning of the crisis, 2008. Where did you go? What was your place?
San Jose. Santa Clara, California.
California?
Yeah.
Why?
That's where my dad lived.
Oh, okay. West Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my dad already came in. He moved to the States in 86, 4 years before I was born. He already had siblings here. He had two brothers that lived in town.
Nice. So, community.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just grew up kind of building his life there.
You were always planning on coming to US then?
My dad was planning that I was coming to the US. Of course. Yeah.
But for example, English. You study English hard now because you knew that you
will have... I started going to an English institute at the age of 10 for four years until I was 14.
Yeah, they will do it. Because in that sense, it's, you know, if you can plan it, then it's also advice for these listeners that we have that, you know, would think to come here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you got to learn that language before you come here because then it's just hard.
Yeah.
Unless you're in, you know, Miami and it's still hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Miami, everybody speaks Spanish, sort of, very normal, South Florida. But the reality is you need to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew. Mm-hmm. So dad was like, institute, private education, let's go.
You know, like at the time, now I see the plan. Like I see like, oh, okay, smart. You know, like you're prepping your kids, all this stuff. At the time, I was just like, okay, I'm going to English school. And it's just never hit like we're doing this. It never felt that way until we were doing it 4 years after I was done with my English education. So it just felt like, oh, I'm done with English school and I can know English. It just never, and I didn't feel like I was, I'm going to English school because I'm going to move to the States someday. That just didn't feel like was the case.
You were
case
a child, right? Or maybe you were a rich kid.
I mean, again, compare, I struggle with that idea. Again, this was like 2 years ago. I went back and I have not been to Santo Domingo yet.
Yeah.
In my travels. I always go to my mom, where my mom grew up in Samaná, which is north. I like the North Shore.
Why?
It's less touristy. It's quieter.
Is it beautiful?
It's gorgeous. Yeah, Puerto Plata area is touristy, but it's not as touristy as like Punta Cana, you know? Yeah,
Punta Cana is the most famous. I think it's the most visited beach in Caribbean.
Which is like, that's great, but like, you're missing out. There's some great stuff on the North Shore.
I will talk to you because I've been in Haiti once, but I've never been in Dominican Republic. So I will talk to you about the secrets.
Yeah. I love hanging out in Las Terrenas. I love like that whole piece around there. There's like a little peninsula that sticks out.
So let's go back to it. I interrupted you. So you go and you say, I struggle with the being middle class because you go to mom and then you went to Santo Domingo. What happened then?
We stayed in Punta Cana for in the trip. And then we stayed in Puerto Plata for a little, in Las Arenas for a little bit. And I just interacting with people that worked in the hotels. And when there was one interaction, someone that was trying to sell us a vacation package. Horrible. Spend like 2 hours with this person. And, you know, they're trying to sell you. But the way that they do that is by trying to get to know you, blah, blah, all this stuff. And when she found out where I grew up, like the town that I grew up, she was like, oh. I'm like, what? Like,
what? What did she mean?
She was just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like,
You're poor or you're rich?
Like, you're rich.
Ah, I told you because you behave like a rich kid. You know, it was never the plan. I just went to private school and then I was like, everything. I was like, dude, where I'm from, I'm like, if there's an opportunity that somebody can take you to US, I would be thinking about it every day for 10 years. While you were like, I just can't. I was like, that's what a rich kid would say.
But like, I'm like, I didn't grow up with
I know, but that's also what rich kids say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's crazy.
I didn't realize I'm rich. If you're poor, you know you're poor.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I was poor and I knew it. You knew it every day.
Because I grew up with the idea that I was poor, you know, in comparison.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When you compare it to the West, we call it the East and West, right?
Yeah.
We were all poor.
Yeah.
Right? But in our thing, I was poor in our poorness, right?
Yeah.
And I knew I'm poor in poor. Well, if you're rich in poor, you...
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually another part is like comparison, it always takes your joy away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have a nice house, but then there is a nicer house.
Mm-hmm.
Stop comparing because it's...
Right.
Now your house is not nice or what?
Yeah, so you just can't... As I was kind of touring the island and kind of getting... Like having conversations with people as an adult... again, I was never an adult there, you know, so
yeah.
I did work, but like I grew up like performing in the arts, and that's another hint that, oh, you have money. I'm like, what? Bro, I started working when I was 14. Anyways,
hold
so
on.
This is a new.
What did you perform? Hold on. I want to see the
musical. Musical theater. And
what's the dance? Merengue?
Merengue is our main.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's did you perform merengue on the stage?
No.
Okay, good.
Ballet.
It's only for ultra rich.
Yeah.
No poor kid can do ballet. What are you talking about? Just the equipment and the classes.
Yeah.
You did ballet?
I I don't know how I got in it.
Yeah, you were rich. That's how.
I think my brother was really, so he started first and he was really well connected. And I think he just hooked it up, you know, somehow. I don't think we were paying for that. But anyways, I grew up basically doing arts. And so anyways, last time I went to DR, I just realized like, oh man, we were like on the upper end of the majority of the people that I met today or in my trip, you know, wow. Like I definitely didn't grew up.
You had a father in US. I remember my uncle was in Sweden, right? So they emigrated.
Mm-hmm.
So you have somebody in a vest, they give you access to a little bit of that wealth and that really push you up.
Mm-hmm.
But you will never be rich because you are in Dominican Republic or Czech Republic. You know what I'm saying? So
yep.
the American rich, you can see it. It's
yep.
obscene, right?
Yep.
You will not get that. But in that sense, because you had that ankle to the angle to the vest,
mm-hmm.
that make you okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Like if my uncle brought these cheap t-shirts,
mm-hmm.
I was like, this is the best thing
but
ever.
I also like felt like my mom was always stressed out. She worked, you know, she was a dressmaker. She was slaving on that machine 7 days a week. Always stressed out about money. I couldn't like ask for ice cream. I felt like I couldn't ask. So it just felt like,
yeah,
I didn't feel rich. I didn't feel like I could just ask for whatever I wanted, you know?
And that so makes, but it's a middle class in, you know, in developing countries. What you're just describing is a middle class, right?
Yeah.
Because she had a job, had a tool, right? My parents each had two jobs or whatever.
Yep.
And then you hustle and then money's tight always. Yep. So yeah, I get it. But you were doing ballet.
But yeah, I was in musical theater. I was introduced to musical theater at church. And so that just kind of like where I ended up performing in the biggest art stage in DR in Santo Domingo. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I studied theater. So my business that I built here in US was with a Czech guy that we studied theater together in Czech Republic and we split for 10 years or 15. He called me up and we got back, but my thesis was about musical theater in Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I've never done ballet though.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So I think like I think maybe I was paying for those ballet classes because I started working when I was 14. And so I was even like helping my mom because she was also always stressed out. Mm-hmm. So I was like, started working on it.
You have siblings?
Age. I have one older brother.
Me too. Okay. All right. So inconclusive if you are rich or not. you went to San Jose. You were 18, something like that?
I was 18.
Yeah. And then what? What happened? Your beginnings here.
I couldn't go to school immediately because they basically, if I started to go to school, they were going to treat me as an international student.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, why? I'm a United States citizen.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you have to be a resident for a year before we can treat you like you live here.
Oh, wow.
So for a whole year, I couldn't go to school. I could go to school, but I didn't have the money to go to school. So I went to my father found a certificate program where it's like, if you want to become an electrician, that's where you become an electrician. Yeah. I found he gave me like a pamphlet with a bunch of different things that I could be.
Yeah.
And one of them was graphic designer.
Oh, nice.
And so I grew up seeing my brother being a graphic designer.
Uh-huh.
He had the little egg Mac that was passed on.
The see-through?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I grew up seeing him like tinker with like what used to be freehand back then, which is like the Illustrator for today.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could do this, I guess, you know, like for a year. I'll I'll dabble in this.
That's great. It's computers and it's graphic design. Everybody needed graphic design, right? Before AI, this,
yeah,
like you, everybody needed graphic design.
Yeah. So I was top of the class. It was a 12-month program. They taught me Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign for 12 months.
Yes.
And
everything is not intuitive. All
yeah.
the three softwares you need to learn.
Yeah.
It's not a Word document or something.
Yeah.
Because you have to learn InDesign and you have to learn in Illustrator.
Yeah.
You need to take classes. Yeah. That's a great start, no?
Yeah, it's a great start. Like they didn't really teach me like color theory or yeah. any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I found that I really enjoyed it. And so I started to buy all the books about design and graphic design. And I just started to crush all that stuff and make sure that I knew what the theory and how to make things beautiful and that sort of thing. And so I still have a large library that I've been trying to get rid of year over year to this day, but that I'm self-taught basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's not bad. And then we can go. So tell me, how did you end up? Because I would like to talk about your current business, Ad Notion. And when you talk about color theory, I always recognize your work because of your colors.
Mm.
And I told you that you did website for my wife's business.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I see your orange or your yellow or your red, mm-hmm. I know it's Ad Notion because it's not red. It's maroon, purplish, right?
Yeah.
The orange is not like your colors are so unique that I actually, when I saw pitch black, I was like, Ad Notion did that.
I always strive to not go for the typical hues that people understand that color as.
Yeah.
I always stress purple, but like, let's go this way. So it has its own tone and you can put a stamp on it for yourself. I stay away from, I use basic colors, but I veer on hue and intent and saturation, you know, to make sure that we don't look like something else, you know?
You can never print your colors. You know that, right?
What do you mean?
You can never hit it on PMS. You go to printer and you want to do leaflets.
Uh-huh.
You can never hit that color. It's too unique.
Yeah.
It's so unique.
Uh-huh.
I love it. It's a good thing, right? And nobody prints anymore. It's so outdated. But in that sense, I really like the work that you guys do. It's very unique. It has that voice. And I want that. I want to look at something and says that Ad Notion did that.
Thank you.
Right?
That's
a brand of the branding,
yes.
right? It's... That's what you wanted. And in that sense, I mean it as a compliment because when I see it, I'm like, I want these colors.
Mm-hmm.
They're so unique and not in a sense of shocking unique. It's just so pleasant.
Yeah, thank you.
Right? So that's... I'll put your website below my podcast so people can look at your website.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that it's really, you know, when you mentioned that you went self-taught and theory of colors, I was like, yeah, dude, you have it in your, you know, it's your expertise, actually, I would say.
Mm.
So how did you land in Portland in Ad Notion when you were in San Jose doing graphic design? San Jose?
Yeah, I was in San Jose. So... Long story longer.
exactly.
So I went to Southern California after a year of living in San Jose to go to a Bible college. So I didn't finish, but I almost had a degree in
theology.
Theology.
Are you Christian?
I am.
Okay, I'm a Christian too. All right.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about it, but no. I don't mind. But it's in that sense, I actually become Christian here in US.
Uh-huh.
Right? So where I'm from, it's not as common. But yeah, I have no problem. But that's okay. So you went to Bible college. How many years?
Two. I was in school.
Okay.
It's a 2-year program, so I did 1 year.
Yeah.
Two semesters. I think I did three, but the third I was already married, so I was totally not interested. So I met my wife in Bible college and married her within 9 months of meeting her, and then I was like, I'm done.
You are like Christian cult, I guess. Because, you know what I'm saying? It's let me go get the good wife.
Yeah.
Okay, so your wife is American?
Yeah, she's from here.
She's from Portland.
Yeah.
So
she was born in Texas, but she grew up in this area.
So was that the reason why you guys came back?
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Oh. So we lived in Southern California for about 4 years, and then we lived in Seattle for 3 years, and then we got sick of Seattle, and we were like, okay, let's go. We always wanted to live closer to family. So that's when we decided to like, okay, we don't like Seattle. Let's go to Portland.
Yeah, yeah, In that sense, you travel up and down the West Coast.
Yeah,
basically. I tell everyone, I travel the world. West Coast is the best. I'm just repeating myself on this podcast again. But West Coast is the best place to be in the world.
Mm.
If I remove this president, right, this dude, right, which he will go, he comes and goes, then in West Coast of United States, the most interesting people live, the most interesting things are happening in that, you know, in that sort of human progress in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sitting here and I have West Coast product, West Coast software, right? I have everything's West Coast. I'm driving West Coast car. You know, so if you think about it, Boeing, Starbucks, Nike, you have a
fear of God.
Fear of God, California, right? But it's a sweatpants. And if you tell my grandma that I'm wearing sweatpants on a camera, she would freak out. Even jeans were wrong.
Right? I have
sweatpants too. But that's Nike, right? Yep. They created athletic leisure.
Yep.
And fear of God just, you know, put it on another level. He actually make fashion out of.
Yes.
So all these ideas are happening on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I am very like, tell me which one is not leading the way that it's not
that's
in
true.
The West Coast.
That's true.
Right. So then people like you and I, we are not Americans in a sense, right? We are not born here. We come from all over the world here and we like mingle and we're like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, that's very unique. And I tell people, because when you go, when you visit, and I don't mean in a bad way, but if you visit south of the United States, if you go to Mississippi, if you go to Alabama, it switches on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shift in the air, in the atmosphere, in everything that you do. And you can see it if you are not colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm okay. But when we travel with my wife and we go in Alabama to gas station, then I'm like, you stay in a car. Mm-hmm. I get the gas. You're not getting out. I don't know why, but. I think I'm doing, you know, I have instincts. So West Coast is great. So you travel up and down till you find your spot. And Portland is sort of this like village of West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But that lifestyle is so nice here.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Right?
Yeah.
In that sense. Tell me what you love about it.
My favorite is Portland. It's between LA and Portland. I love the creative energy in LA. Sun, the food, like just don't love the traffic, but love the energy. I'm always, every time I travel back, I just feel very inspired creatively. Portland is my favorite because it's a good mix of small, creative, good food, and like accessible to a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. And so, it's my it's like a good mix of city and smallness.
Yes.
And I grew up within the 30-mile radius. So
and that's the, I call it high quality of life.
Yeah.
Because in LA, and I get it, and actually I would, if you're in creative industry, if you're in fashion, right, LA is, you know, is very innovative in that sense. But I struggle with the traffic. I struggle how ugly, you know, the concrete jungle is there. Because you come here and everything's green.
Yes.
It's so pleasant.
Yes, it is.
So that's interesting. Okay. So tell me more about how did you start AdNotion, or how did you come up with that idea?
At the time, 2020, so I was finishing up. I basically got laid off at the end of 2019 around October, and they gave me like a 2-month severance. So I was like, great.
What was the job in
I was like senior user interface designer.
Okay.
So I was doing a lot of software development work. I was doing that for 4 years. That's the place that I worked at the longest, and great culture. And once it was done, I was like, I already had worked at agencies, but I was like, I hate the culture of an agency. And so I basically said, I'm never going to start one.
So tell me what's negative about that culture you're describing, because I want to know if I...
Agency culture is just long hours. You're just, it's grueling, you know, clients tend to not be easy, and management agencies don't do a good job at getting rid of bad clients. And so you're, if you're a junior or anything like that, you're just getting plummeted by just terrible experience. That was my experience.
I agree with that. I was listening to you carefully and I was like, yeah, I cannot say anything. I mean, there's positives too, because I had an agency, yeah. but what you're describing is like, if you ask me, do I want to have an agency now? I was like, there will be reasons why I say no. The clients, the grind, the thing that, mm-hmm. you know, it's very transactional, the business, yes. right? There's no long-term.
Yeah.
It's all, you are only as good as your last job,
right?
Which puts so much stress on you.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah. yeah. So I was like, it was not on the cards for me. I was just like, I'm not interested. I looked and looked and looked. I was remote before COVID. So I was already working fully remote before COVID. And I was just like, I don't want to go back to the office.
Yeah.
So I tried to find a job. So I interviewed in New York, went really well, didn't land anything. And maybe four months like in the search, I found a contract that I just put under my business at the time. And I was just like, I'll do this for the next, it was like a 3 to 4 month contract. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I have a 2 month servant and then I have a 3 month contract. That's going to get me like
yeah.
further along. And then I just tasted the cake. I just wanted to continue to have the freedom that I had, which was working from home, choosing my schedule, that sort of thing. And there was a moment there where I was just like, okay, screw it. I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to do it differently. And we're going to have a different culture. So
tell me how you do it differently, because I want to know, you know, and it's not just the colors that I simplify it, but tell me what is our notion for clients.
So let's talk about the team piece, because that's the one that I was really bucking against. I think for clients, what makes us.
Yeah, I love that. So let's start with culture. Yeah. You have a good foundation that yeah. you can get the clients. Yeah. Right?
So our culture, you know, I bring a lot of my home to it, you yeah. know. We value relationships over yeah. everything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's people first, money second. You know, I'm willing to say no to a client to protect my team. Mm. You know, I'm willing to yeah. like let go of that, you know, yeah. in order to put people first. I'm willing to just be thoughtful in the way that I interact with my team, you know. Yeah. And so that's one of the things. We have like five values that, you know, work hard, go home, you know. So we work hard back home. We work hard, really hard, but we go home yes. and we chill yeah. hard as well. Yeah, we yeah, party yeah. hard. We celebrate. Yeah. We're big, yeah. you know, big energy, you know, everywhere you go once we're off. So we value work, but we also value rest. And so that's one of the big things that we bring culturally.
That's great, because I build my business around values too. And you know, we hired this consultant in 2008. So you have a great culture. You attract the talent, right? Mm-hmm. That means the company can really, you're in the same unified voice, I would say, mm-hmm. to the client, right? Mm-hmm. The brand voice. So tell me what makes unique about AdNotion towards the clients.
Yeah, I think not a single element that we do is unique. It's the combination of it
okay.
that makes us unique. Yeah. And so, you know, we're a branding agency. That's not unique.
Yeah.
We are a B Corp and we are like really care about purpose. That's not unique. We are like systems driven in terms of how we approach brand. Oh, when we build yeah, brand, yeah, yeah. we are building systems for your business. A lot of people think about brand as like artsy and creative and like yeah, all yeah. that. We're like, yes, but also, we need to make sure that your team can execute this. So that's not unique.
No.
But when you put all of those things together, you know, we're brand first, we are systems, we are purpose driven, and we work for purpose driven companies. Those things put together and we're small. So you can go work with the big guys and pay a lot of money. You're going to end up working with a smaller group of folks within those companies. Just, you know, I tell
when
people.
When did you start AdNotion?
2020.
Yeah, you are small now.
Yeah.
I saw in your description, right? And you said you are active in promoting community right? Community-driven design and championing the role of design equity in brand building. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So one of the things that what got me into what made me very excited about starting at Notion at the time was that George Floyd happened. That didn't make me excited. I just broke my heart. And it just put me, threw me for a spin in terms of my involvement in my community at the time. At the time, I felt like I was not very involved and I was not being a part of the solution. And I was already in the middle of building a studio. And then I started to ask myself the question, okay, I want to show up. How? How does that look like? And so I was like, maybe I can make it my job. If I'm building a studio, maybe I can make my studio do the work that we're doing is benefiting the community. And then I'm forced in a way to show up because it's my job to do so. And so at Notion, we help purpose-driven brands. We say people, brands that are for people and planet, we help them launch, whoever you are. You can be in any kind of space. You can be consumer goods. You can be innovation, technology. Doesn't matter, as long as you're benefiting people or planet in the way, in your philosophy, in the way that you're producing things, we're in. And so with that came an initiative where we donate 5% of our top revenue to minority-owned businesses.
5% of top line?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That is, yeah. So we use a sprint model, which is a five-day process in which we deliver brand and website. 5 weeks for brand,
five weeks for website. I see. So you do workshops, so you donate the amount of value in your work, not in dollars.
Yes.
Okay, because I, by the way, because I'm, you know, I used to run publicly traded company, and 5% of the top line means there are projects that you lose money.
Yes.
Right? So you have to donate from from projects that you already lost money that will cost you extra.
Yeah.
But if you donate your expertise,
yes,
then it doesn't show on your Excel. It's great. That's actually wonderful.
Yeah.
Because that's your expertise. Right? Yeah. And it's maybe more impactful than the money.
Still hard. Find the time to do it while you can be paying, you can be making money during that time. But yes, my goodness.
These immigrants coming here and changing the place for better. That's what I'm saying. That's what you're doing, no?
Yeah.
You're changing the place for better.
Yeah. So we've been doing that since 2020, every year, 5%. I think we're at...
Any good example? Do you have any website we should look at? Or what? Like, oh, we did this... nonprofit website or something.
They're all very small because we like them. You know, Band de Sol is one that we did recently.
Band de Sol?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a clothing company. We did My Daddy Sauces. We did Pitch Black.
Pitch Black.
Yeah. We did partially some of the Better Portland work was part of that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So we definitely...
Dude, I knew when I saw this Pitch Black, you did it this year, right? Because I don't know if I was last year.
Earlier this year.
But the... I went to Pell District. I'm sitting there, and they put that Pitch Black logo, which new font, I call it fat font, and then the blue, and then the colors start going away, and new colors, and I was like, that's odd notion.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew it when I saw it, dude. I didn't even know that you did that, but I was like, I can see it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great, right? That's your work. That's something that, you know, people with brand sensitivity appreciate.
Yeah, thank you.
I just love that. Okay, so last thing that we will talk, because we're running out of time. Imagine somebody's considering to move to US.
Mm.
It can be from Dominican Republic, it can be from anywhere else. What would you tell them as an advice?
Man. I spent the first decade of my life doing what any person who's trying to survive feels like they need to do, which is to blend in.
In US?
Yeah.
First 10 years in US?
First 10 years of US, I was trying to assimilate as much as possible, get rid of my accent. As you can tell, I have not been able to do that. It used to be a lot thicker.
No, but I ask you about the English because your English is very good.
Thank you.
So that's why I was like, hey, you were ready.
Yeah.
Like keep the accent. It makes you interesting.
Yeah.
I keep mine.
Yeah.
But your vocabulary in your English is excellent.
Thank you.
You spoke English when you were a child.
Yeah.
That's how it sounds.
Yeah. Thank you. So I spent a lot of time wearing and dressing like white people dress, you know. I spent a lot of time, you know, like small things like shaving my face and all very small things that made me try to blend in as much as possible. And I would just urge anybody, and I spent 10 years like basically shedding my identity away. And now after a lot of therapy, you know, I'm in this journey of regaining it back. And so I think people can save that pain of trying to assimilate so much that they lose who they are, and they are irrecognizable a decade later, which definitely happened to me. So I would say, like, I think there's a way to succeed.
If you go to West Coast, you will be allowed to be yourself more than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like.
Yes, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Nobody's in Portland. You're like, you're Portland, dude.
Yeah.
There's nobody's going to look at you. But George Floyd was so tragic. Actually, my wife started her own company.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like listening to you. And I was like, you know, when you have that evil thing that creates these ripples of goodness.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you don't see it till you talk to two people. They're like, when George Floyd started, I was like, I got to do it differently.
Yes.
And we took that bad thing and... Not we, but you guys took the things and now the positive ripples.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, you know, America is very interesting in that sense that you have to come and be on top of your game because it can ground you down in that sense, right? That's sort of your advice too. Okay, this is great. Anything else?
No.
Anything
this
else?
This was
about?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
All right, thanks. Bye.